Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host and the podfather of your favorite hebdomadal podcast. Oh, I'm glad you're with us. I'd be hit with methemoglobinemia if you took my breath away with the idea that you missed this week's show. Here's our associate producer, Kate, to tell us what's coming.
Hey, Tony. This week it's storytelling with an award-winning crime fiction author. Carl Vondero has made many mistakes in his professional writing, and he wants you to learn from them. His savvy advice includes: use the senses, evoke emotion, get your readers and viewers to empathize, find the conflict and success, show transformation, and a lot more. You'll find him at carlvondero.com. On Tony's Take Two.
Tales from the Gym. Rob gets flirtatious.
Here is storytelling with an award-winning crime fiction author.
It's a pleasure to welcome to Nonprofit Radio Carl Vondero. Carl is an award-winning author of crime fiction. Inspired by his father's commitment to their local YMCA, Carl began working with nonprofits. As he aged and got much better at storytelling, he helps other organizations be more successful using the lessons he's learned from writing novels. You'll find Carl and a storytelling primer you can get for free at carlvondero.com. Welcome to Nonprofit Radio, Carl.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It's fun to be here.
I'm glad you're having fun already. We're not even 2 minutes in. Yeah. Outstanding. All right. I hope it's not all downhill from here. Like, now's the fun, and then it's all a steep decline for the next however 40 minutes.
Well, I don't know. Well, try to have a good novelistic ending, uplifting, right?
Very good. Yes, we will. Yeah. I do like to leave some inspiration and empowerment. But the fun will continue. That's true. The fun certainly can continue. I'm sure it will. So we're here to get some storytelling advice from a master storyteller, award-winning fiction author. Tell us about your most recent book, Saving Miles.
Sure. I write about crime, but I don't just write about crime. I write about dysfunctional families who have to come together to survive crime. And so I'm really dealing very much with family. And in this book, I'm dealing with a family with a very rebellious son. He's having so many problems that they have to send him to a residential treatment center. And when he comes back, seems to be totally changed. But in fact, he sneaks off to Mexico and gets kidnapped. Mm. His father, a very successful banker, and his wife, who's involved with a nonprofit, have to come together and get involved with money laundering in order to save him. So nothing like money laundering for a good family story.
Saving Miles, M-Y-L-E-S. Miles is the son that you're talking about. All right. What brought you to the crime and family overlap genre?
Yeah, I was always interested in crime fiction because, you know, I liked plot, but now I've gotten more deeply into character. And I find that crime amplifies any problems in a family. And, you know, I've got a family. I've been married for 40 years. I've had a number, you know, we've gone through a number of things. And I wanted to deal with that in this book. 20 years ago, we had to send our son to a residential treatment center. And he came back, and now he's changed 20 years later. But I wanted to put some of that experience in the book. Now, like with nonprofits, you know, you have a lot of these stories, but you need to get permission from the people who the stories are about. So I got permission from him to use some of that material in the book itself. It helps me deal with character as well as getting deeper into what makes a family not function and what makes it thrive. That's why I do that kind of fiction.
Are you working on something now, or no, Saving Miles is recent, so maybe you're taking a break.
No, I'm not.
You're not
Here's
taking a break.
no.
Okay.
Here's a saying in the fiction world: you get your whole life to write your first book, and you get a year to write your second one. So
Right.
there are a lot of pressures to keep writing. So I've got a book out that we're trying to sell to publishers now, and then I've got another book I'm trying to complete. So the first three books, I did another book before that, my first book called Murderabilia, about about what happens to the son of a serial killer and how does he overcome that kind of stigma, especially when he's accused of the same crime. So.
Is that the book that where you started learning your lessons? You're pretty open about learning storytelling lessons. Yeah, that's why we're here. We're here to learn from your what you've learned. But what was that? That first book, Murderabilia?
Yes, it was. What I found is that I have really gotten to be a competent writer by going through a lot of failures. And over again, and each one you learn a little bit. And on that book, it'd been years I'd written other books, but nothing close to publishing. And then I went to a writer's conference with Jacqueline Michard there, and she wrote this book called The Deep End of the Ocean, which was the first selection of Oprah when she first started doing books. And she said, "Look, I will help you." Well, I had to pay her, of course. So she helped me with a lot of the elements of a book. And what I find is, I'll tell you the rest of the story because it's not an easy story to become a published author. I worked with her for a couple of years. She introduced me to her agent in New York, founded an agency. He liked the book and wanted to represent me. And so, I think, well, I'm going to be a bestseller. That's what's going to happen. Well, he had his assistants read over each draft, and it would take him 3 months to respond to what the objections they had and for me to try and fix it. After a year, he said, "I don't really think I'm the right agent for you." So a year and didn't submit it to any. And here's what else he said. He said, "I want you to know I'm very serious about this. And in my 10 years as an agent, I've only done this 3 times."
That's supposed to cheer you up? That
That's
you're at the
supposed
bottom
to.
three, you're among the bottom three of his 10-year career.
So, what do you do? Give up?
Please tell me, first of all, please tell me the premise is wrong. You're joking, right? This is a joke. No, don't, you're not serious about this. I'm at the bottom of your 10-year career. Great.
I had a lot of responses I could have made, but I
Yeah.
didn't.
I can think of a few colorful ones. Yeah.
So then I thought, well, I got to really learn how to pitch this book. And so I went to a course on how to pitch a book, and I got it down to one sentence, an elevator pitch for a book. And every author needs this, just like in a nonprofit, that you've got to be able to tell somebody quickly what you're about, what your book's about. And for an author, it's a publisher, so they can sell it to distributors. And so I did that, and then I went to this writer's conference. In these writers' conferences, you have all these wannabe writers like me standing around trying, hoping that the agents and the acquisitions editors will ask you a question. Please, please, please ask me a question. So this agent turns to me and she says, "Okay, describe your book in one sentence." I had it.
Yeah.
I did it. And you get this reaction, which is like gold to a writer, because she and this acquisitions editor said, "Oh, that's all it was, but it's gold." So she became my agent, and she's still my agent. So then we found a publisher, which was a good publisher, a mid-level publisher. 2 months after we signed the contract, their parents said, "Well, we're getting out of the mystery book business." So they still represented the book. What do you do then? Do you start over and try and find another publisher? We decided to stick with them for this book. Okay, so the book was good. It was getting good reviews. There was a conference in San Diego called the Left Coast Crime Conference, where they had an award for best debut. and I was nominated for it, this book, Murderabilia. So I thought, this is great. It's in my hometown. I can sell this book. You know, I have a good chance of winning this. The conference starts, and a day later, it's canceled because of COVID. So, you know, all these things are, you find that all the spade work you've done sometimes pays benefits for you don't for ways you don't realize. And so it was the prize was the voting was done virtually and the book won the award. And this agent who I still have was much better suited to me than the original agent was. So what I found is, you know, it's important to be a good writer, but more important than any of that, and I know all your nonprofit audience knows this, is the most important skill you have is being tenacious. And just keep going and keep learning. So that's my story about how I became a published author.
Okay. Well, we need to go deeper on storytelling and the arc of the
Yes.
story and but
Yeah.
tenacity, yeah, you're right. Tenacity, I mean you turn down by funders, whether they're individual or institutional all the time. You know, of course, every ask is not a yes, I'd love to, or even a ooh, I love that.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
so tenacity
Yeah.
is important. Tenacity in building our teams. Good people leave. We wish them well. We grin and bear it. But you know, we have to keep building the team.
And the other thing is, listen, because when people turn you down, sometimes they give you a nugget that will really help you in the next people you pitch.
Well, it may, yes, and it may even help you with them because
Yes,
I've
yes.
often said six no's and you're halfway to a yes.
Right.
So, you know, you may be able to come back to them with something a little modified, or maybe when the timing is better. Now, that timing might be 2 years from now, which is not what you were hoping for, but, you know, so yes, you're right. It may help you with a future solicitation or even a volunteer ask or something, but it could help you with that individual or that couple or that institution as well in the future. So yeah, absolutely listening. I guess I could have said I wasn't paying attention to what you said, but that's so hackneyed. You know, what'd you say? I didn't catch it. You know, but that's so old. You know, I try to be a little more
Well,
a little more original than that. So let's you know, I feel like I'm like oh captain, my captain. I'm at the foot of the master,
okay.
award-winning storyteller of fiction, but we need to translate that to our nonfiction, nonprofit
Yes.
stories. Where captain, you know, where do we what would you like
Let's
to
start
what would
off
you like
with
to first yeah, think of first? Yeah.
let's start off with the basics here first, okay? So what you've got a lot of tools to use as a storyteller, but the basic thing you have to do is emotion. You've got to, and the emotion, you as a storyteller, you can feel the emotion yourself, but that's not important. The important thing is to get your listener to feel that emotion. And so, you know, how do you do that? That's the key to all of this. You know, and you have personal stories, you have stories about your organization, you have stories about people that the organization's helped, you have numbers, you have all these things that you can use. But when you go down to the basics of a story, you're starting out with a conflict of something that happened to characters who are likable. The first thing is, you know, you describe who you are or who the narrator is. And you can say they were successful in everything. All they've done is successful. But that doesn't reach a listener as much as starting from the bottom of how that you've had to fight out of something. This something that's happened that challenges that character, challenges you as the narrator. So, for instance, you as a nonprofit, you could say, you know, I want to help kids, or I want to help diabetes. But you could also say that, I had a close friend or my father who had diabetes when they were young, and that motivated me to do well, and I was always helping him. I became, I went in, I became a successful accountant, but what really touched my heart was going back to what had killed the closest my closest friend, my father. That kind of thing immediately connects you with the listener or the reader, because it connects you with them emotionally. It also connects you with curiosity. You've raised a question. How did you do this? How did you use that experience to be successful? And by raising that question, you're also promising that listener that you're going to give them an answer to it.
And likable too. You said a character,
Yes.
something bad has happened to a character is likable. How can we not like you? Your best friend was your father, and
Yes,
now you want to
yes.
help others not lose their best friends.
Yes. So, I mean, you could say, I went to Harvard, I graduated summa cum laude, I was the top of my class, I was the youngest partner at my law firm, and every client I've helped has been successful. I've been the leading money getter in my company. You, as a listener, what do you think about that? Do you like that person?
Yeah, it sounds haughty, right? Bragging, yeah.
Insecure, and you think, do you want that person to help you? You maybe admire them, but part of you wants them to fail. But if a
Yeah,
person has
that's
gone,
interesting.
f
Yeah, right.
if a person has gone from failure to success, then that listener thinks, okay, I can identify with that. Everybody's been afraid of failure or has failed. And they think, what lesson am I going to learn from you that might apply to me? And they also want an emotional payoff, which they may not even know. But they want to feel the emotion of that success at the end of your story. So these are kind of some of the basics on it. And when you look at it, you have that conflict, you have a plot, as to what problem motivated that character, your organization, or you as a person forward. What did you learn that helped you? And this is what your listener is going to take away and extrapolate from. And how did that transform you? And this is, what a story has to tell. Here's a story. Marc Benioff of Salesforce.
Yep.
He was like the youngest executive in Salesforce. He went to Harvard. He was programming at 15. He could start off with all of that when he introduces himself. But the way I read he introduced himself was the thing that really punched me in the gut. Was when my mentor fired me from a company he had invested $2 million in and took away my shares. That was what led to my growth. So, hits you emotionally, raises a question, and he's going to give you the answer. And your listener will wait for that answer. They want that answer, and you better deliver it.
You talked about telling first person stories,
Yeah.
but we're going to be writing about people or animals or a forest that was, it might not even, right? So it may not, very well may not even be human. It may not even, well, it's certainly it's living, but not in human form.
Yeah.
How does your advice translate to writing in second or third person?
Well, you still have the point of view of that person, and that is the way that person looks at the world, the way they talk. And so you can identify and you can sympathize with that point of view when you talk about that person. Like me, I talked about Mark Benioff. I'm not him. When you're talking about the forest, the work that they do, I like to get it on a human level. So, what has your progress done for people? How has that helped people, and specifically how it's helped people? I don't know. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it starts to get to it. Or even if it's a forest, even, I mean, the forest is living.
Yes,
And
yes.
presumably the people we're writing about care about the, we're writing to, care about the living forest. So
Yeah.
the forest has life in it. It has insects, it has plants, it has animals, it has rodents, it has predators and prey. Okay.
It depends
Animals,
on
is
your
that what?
audience. Again,
Yeah.
I mean, if your audience is very much back to nature, they love the beauty of the forest, they love, all the animals, etc. Well, that's what you want to concentrate on. But if your audience is about helping people, then it's got to be about how the forest helps people.
Okay. So let's dive in a little deeper on some of these. So
Yeah.
the conflict, it's
Yeah.
something that's happened or is going to happen to someone who's likable. Can you say more about
Sure.
setting up the conflict?
Okay, so Robert McKee, who is like the guru of script writing in Hollywood, he says basically a story starts out with balance, something knocks it off balance, changes everything. The hero then takes it on him or herself to solve that problem, is transformed, and then rescues the castle, whatever. So conflict has to be something that changes everything. It can be internal, like that person has anger issues or can't see the forest for the trees. It can be an organizational problem where they have the wrong philosophy. It can be a leadership problem where people aren't getting along with the leader. It can be an external conflict. And interestingly, I think you were in the Air Force, so one of the principles in Air Force is that there's nothing like a good enemy to make a good plane. And so the idea that your enemy, because of you've had to compete with them, has taught you what it is to be successful. I think that's something that a lot of people miss out on in their stories. A good enemy.
The enemy could be the, maybe it's the illness that we're fighting.
Yes, could be the
The
illness.
disease or the illness. It could be animal abandonment.
Could be the donors you're approaching. You're approaching it the wrong way. Could be your messaging. You're doing the wrong messaging. Could be because you're not distinguishing yourself enough from all the other nonprofits, right? That you don't have a distinct enough message. It could be because you're not being likable, or you're just not you're not reaching people. The number can be a lot of things, the enemy.
When we're writing, it's okay to write informally, right? And also, I just want to make sure I want to make sure that listeners know that we're conscious that they're not writing novels. They're writing like 250 to 300 words, maybe a newsletter article, could even be just 50 words for a sidebar or something. So they've got to condense your advice into somewhere between 50 and 300 words. 300 words is even long these days, but let's say at an outer limit of an insider newsletter where people are actually reading your 300 words, whether it's print or digital. So we've got to condense this down. We don't have the, well, I would say the luxury, you might say the challenge of writing 55 or 60,000 words. So where was my point? What was the point of that? Oh, okay. I lost my own.
What do you do when you're limited by the length?
Yeah,
There's something
thank
called
you.
flash fiction where people do this, and people write short stories where every
Yeah, but
word has to count.
we're even shorter than the short story. We're
Yeah,
writing a
yeah.
blog post or a newsletter article or sidebar.
Right, but it's still got to, it's like a scene in a way in a book, because a scene has to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. There's got to be a change in the scene. There's got to be a point of view in the scene. There's got to be a voice in the scene. Who's telling this story? What's distinct about that voice? So, when you're telling a story in 300 words about one of your clients or someone that your nonprofit has helped, What was the issue? What was the key aspect that changed this person? How did they show that how they were changed? And how does it apply to you as well as to others? And you can do it in 300 words. You just have to be you have to pick out only the right details and the right things to describe. Does that make sense?
That becomes the challenge. Yeah, because
Yeah.
we want to stuff so much in because our work is so important. We want readers to know the detail. You got to know the details of what we did. And then it becomes focused on us in our us and our nonprofit and our work instead of focused on the person or the animal or the forest that we helped. That's where the
Yeah.
focus should be, right? Not on how good we are and how successful we were.
Right, right.
We're obviously part of the story because we're the change agent,
Yep.
but don't focus it on yourself and your work.
Right. And you're
And we want
looking
to
for
stuff
the
it with detail because we want everybody to know how much we do for every single tree.
but the reader or the listener, they can't absorb all that detail.
Right.
What they want is one detail that sticks with them. All right. And so, one tree, what tree can you describe in one sentence that illustrates the problem? And this is the problem we want to solve. And how did that tree change? If you can do that, it's great. It kind of gets into what objects are, one thing that isn't used a lot in stories is objects, and objects really can communicate a lot about change in character.
Like what? What do you mean? Well,
So,
so tree. Well, just for tree, we could substitute it was an animal, or
yeah.
it was a person, or you said that was a diabetic.
Sure.
It was a person with a carcinoma. What? So we're substituting, but flesh out what you were saying about
Okay,
what about objects.
here's a real story. Okay, from 9/11. And a woman whose husband worked in one of the towers, and it was her birthday on September 11th. He went to the tower and she never saw him again. Several weeks later, the people had uncovered the rubble and they uncovered his car, but they didn't want to open his car without her there because she was his wife. And it was a matter of respect. So they opened the trunk. And inside the trunk, they found a wrapped birthday gift, a birthday card, and one rose. Do you need to say any more? Yeah. So those are the kinds of details you're looking for. I mean, Joan Didion had a detail where
The objects convey
she,
love.
yeah, very much, very much. You can find it in Little Women. Mr. Lawrence has a piano that he loans to Beth, but and he's cold and Beth is sensitive and he gives you something about Mr. Lawrence and then he gives the piano to her and then you find out his dead daughter played that piano. I mean, look how that illustrates love. Or Joan Didion talked about in one of her fiction pieces in Latin America, to describe the hotel, she said she went year after year. And the postcards never changed.
You don't have to say anything about the furnishings or the places. You just know it conveys. All right. So
Yeah.
be savvy about the use of objects. My
You
earlier.
could,
Go ahead. I want you to continue.
and people like contradiction. The tree was beautiful, but its roots were rotting. So why? That raises a question. And what did you do to solve that question? And what one thing was the key to solving that question? What one change?
That's very good. Did you just think of that, or do you use that example all the time, the tree and the rotting roots?
No, I just making stuff all the
That's
time.
why you. That's why you're an award-winning fiction writer. All right.
Well, you get enough practice, things
Right.
happen. Yeah.
Yeah. The animal looked. The kitten looked. The kitten was purring, but her paws were bloody.
Yes,
Why? Why?
yes.
Well, from abandonment because she hadn't been cared
Yes.
for, and right, but why? Yeah.
Here's another example from John Le Carré. Okay. So you can inform people or you can connect with people, right? And I think Lynn Bohart, I listened to his, he talked about this too. So here's informational. The cat sat on the mat. And here's connecting. The cat's, here's a story. The cat sat on the dog's mat.
there's a conflict.
Yeah.
It's time for Tony's take two.
Thank you, Kate. There was something today, this very day, in the gym, and it was kind of cute. It was sweet and cute. Our friend Rob, you'll remember, he's the former Marine, Semper Fi, works out in the gym. I see him all the time, many times a week. And just as I was getting set up on the elliptical, I was just getting started. Like I was in my first minute or so, it was early, and that's the first thing I do in the gym is the elliptical. So I just gotten there, and he's chatting with a woman whose name I don't know yet. We'll uncover it eventually. They all get identified or identify themselves eventually. So he says, "There's a problem with my phone. It doesn't have your number in it." I thought, oh, that's kind of hokey. I don't know. It's just, I mean, we're adults here. I don't know. It was kind of sweet in the same way. Like it was a little bit like he was embarrassed, you know, like almost like a teenager, an adolescent. There's a problem with my phone. It doesn't have your number. So, and then he jumps right on, you know, he's kind of, and then he starts to backpedal a little bit. Is it inappropriate if I ask you for your number? Yeah, it was like, you know, it reminded me of being in like 8th grade, and I asked Michele DeBinotti to go to a movie, and then I said, "No, but you know, you're probably very busy," and we never ended up going to the movie. So she said, so she says, "No, it's only inappropriate if you ask inappropriately." So I thought that was just kind of a sweet, like adolescent type exchange. I don't know, you know, the guy's a former Marine. Semper Fi. So she gave him her number. And then later on this morning, Rob, Semper Fi, was also then he was talking chatting up another woman, and she was talking about her cooking, and she had some fresh homemade sourdough bread in her car for some reason. I didn't catch why she's driving around with sourdough bread in her car. Maybe she's got to make a delivery to the food pantry or something. I don't know. But, and you know, he's going on and, you know, like flirting, like, "Oh, I bet your cooking is really good." And, you know, so she ends up going to the car to get him a loaf of this, the homemade sourdough bread. So he walks out with this loaf of sourdough bread. So now, then he's asking, "Well, what, you know, what kind of wine do you like? I have a lot of wine at my house." And she said, "Reds and Pinot Noir." This woman drinks Pinot Noir. By the way, her birthday is October 26th, I learned. We'll get her name later. As I said, you know, it eventually will come. Rob's birthday is October 24th, so they have a birthday within 2 days of each other. Both Scorpios. They made that point. And then at the end, you know, so he's got his bread now, and then they continue working out, and then as he's on his way out, he says, to the bread lady, "I'm going for a coffee. If you're not busy, you know, like, you know," but he doesn't really say, "Do you want to come with me?" He said, "If you're not busy." So again, you know, like soft, very soft ask, very soft teenage ask. And she said, "No, I, and then she hesitated a little bit. I wasn't sure if she was telling the truth. No, I have to get my hair cut at 11. I don't know. It sounded weak. I don't know. Maybe she was being truthful. I'm not sure. But, and then, you know, that, and then that was it. But Rob getting a little flirtatious, coming on to the ladies a little bit at the gym. When I find their two names, they both are frequent attendees at the gym. I'll certainly report their names, let you know. But, you know, it was kind of cute, but a little tragic, also. Poor Rob. Semper Fi. That's Tony's take two. Kate?
No, he sounds so charming. I think the younger generation would say, like he's got a lot of riz, like charisma.
Oh, really?
Riz, yep.
Really?
Yep,
I don't
absolutely.
know. Okay. That's interesting. Riz. He's got Riz. I never heard that, of course, because, he's got a lot of Riz. I don't know. It didn't come across to me as Riz. It kind of came across as a little sad and tragic, but cute also. But still, the guy's 45 or 50. I mean,
It's too late.
I
Yeah.
know, but, there's a problem with my phone. Come on. I don't know. That's a little sad, I think.
Or
All right. Well, that's Rob. That's
I like
Robin.
I've lost my phone number. Is that what you said? I've lost my phone number. Can I
No,
have
he said there's a problem with my phone.
problem with my
It
phone?
doesn't have your number.
Okay. He's trying. I think that's cute.
Cute is the way I see it. Yeah. I'm not sure about charisma, but Riz. All right, I have to try to use Riz in a sentence now. But nobody I talk to will know what it means. They'll say, "What? What do you mean?" Because nobody I talk to is going to know Riz. I better not.
Oh,
No,
I'm a college student, so I
yeah,
guess I hear it more.
baby boomers trying to talk like Gen Z. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. I don't. I think I've never done. I think about it sometimes when I'm writing a LinkedIn post. Like I'll try to use something colloquial. I can't think of an example right now, but I. If I type it, I delete it. Now it's. I'm a baby boomer. I'm stuck with that. I'm not going to try to be a Gen Z or even millennial. Just use my language. That it's embarrassing. It's like an old guy who can't get out of his sports car. Like you got. It's humiliating.
Oh, I love those
No,
sports.
don't try to be something you're not. Just you're a baby boomer. Just stick there. That's it. Play, stay in your lane. Like I would say, we would say, stay in your lane. Stay in
Stay
your lane.
in lane. Well, we've got buku buttloads more time. Here's the rest of Storytelling with an award-winning crime fiction author with Carl Vondero.
Formality. I think a lot of people think, I don't think this is unique to nonprofits, but that's where all our listeners are, that you have to be formal. There's a maybe we learned it in elementary school English composition class or something. There's a formality. We have to write a certain way and not write the way people talk. But maybe that was right 50 years ago or so when I was in high school, but I don't think it's true anymore. Do you agree that writing is we can write the way people talk and that's okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Mark Twain did it, right? You write the way people talk. And that's what, because people believe you. They think, you're not doing something staged. You're not talking from a PowerPoint presentation. It's your voice. Are you humorous? Or are you not humorous? Do you like to describe things a lot? Do you like to use numbers? Do you not like to use numbers? This is your voice, and this is who you are. And if you don't use who you are, then the people won't think you're credible. Because they can tell. They can tell when you've memorized a pitch, And here's something else. Oscar Wilde said, "Be yourself, everyone else is taken."
Yeah, I've heard that. Right.
Yeah. So that's you've and that's what appeals to people. And part of being yourself is being vulnerable enough to tell, what problems you've had and how you've overcome them. It's not all a good story.
Yeah, say more about the vulnerability. I admire that. There's a strain of thought that to be vulnerable is a sign of weakness. I think it's exactly the opposite. I think if you're vulnerable, it's a sign that you're strong and confident and able to open up and explain, share your vulnerability, explain what went wrong, what you did wrong, how you failed,
Yes.
how you let someone down, et cetera, whatever it might be, how you let yourself down. But say more about the empathy that comes with vulnerability.
Right. Right. Well, when you tell someone how you failed, they know you're being true. You wouldn't lie about that, you know? So they immediately trust you. And they felt the same way probably at one time or another. Plus, you've raised a question because they know you're going to tell about how you became successful afterwards. So you've raised a question: how did you do that? What lesson am I going to learn from that, from become this guy who's just like me? And how can I apply that in my own life, you know, or in my own nonprofit? So when you say, you know, okay, so here's another story from A Reason to Survive, which was arts, and they're here in San Diego, and they would do art therapy for kids in high school so they could discover who they were and have the confidence, you know, to be successful people. So they had all these programs that were in buildings that they owned with art and theater and performance, and then COVID hit. So you can talk about that. You know, I mean, you could say we were going to go bankrupt because of all of this. You know, what do we do? It all depends on kids coming in to see us and personally in front of us. So what did they do? They changed it into a virtual program, and they sent out arts kits to all these kids that they could do at home and take virtual classes, and they actually expanded their business. So you start from vulnerable. You know, we had the totally wrong strategy, and how we made it into the right strategy. You could talk about, you can be personal too. I worked 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. I couldn't talk with my wife. I was going to have a heart attack. I was hyperventilating. I was yelling at my kids. And then I realized I had the wrong personal strategy about how to make a business successful. You know, you and that personal side of it connects right away. You can do it about how you started out. And this is something else. When to reach somebody emotionally, you can start out about how bad things were, but you can also use some writer elements in it in terms of when you label an emotion, it loses its power. So when you describe it, what happens, then it gains power. And how do you do? You can do that through the senses, for one thing. And most people use sight entirely too much. There are the other senses you can use as well in making the listener feel your story. When so somebody described in my primer, they said when we first started out. The only clients we had were insects. We were in the basement of a building. The floors were slanted. It flooded. The only clients we had were insects and rats. We maxed out our credit cards. You know, you're getting a feel for this. You could even do it farther by saying, well, it smelled musty. It was so cold in the winter. We grasped our cups of coffee to get warmer. You know, you could say the loneliest sound in the world was there was no telephone ringing. So you're using all these senses to describe how bad the situation was without ever labeling it. And that's something you can do as well. I probably got a little bit off the track of what you asked me. I can't remember.
That's all right. We'll go back to some. No, that's valuable. I mean, this is all, it all translates, you know, it's just we're it translates to our work. It's interesting that you pronounce the word primer. I learned it as primer. It's a primer. You didn't learn it as primer? No.
I don't know. Maybe I've got it wrong. I've just always,
Oh.
you know, in prime number, so you think
Prime.
primer. Maybe
Number
it's
one.
primer.
Yeah, prime number one.
Yeah.
I don't know. All right, we'll have to check. Maybe it's both. Maybe it's both. I may be wrong. I don't think I am. See, you're more willing to be vulnerable than I am. It's always been primer in my life. How can I say I might be wrong? I can't put myself up that way. I can't do it.
Well, here I am, a writer, and I don't even know how to pronounce something.
I'll never be a successful writer. No, I may be wrong, but maybe it's both. Language evolves. That's one thing that I've learned. At 63, I've learned language evolves. Words that used to mean one thing now mean the complete opposite sometimes. Like something was hot or cool, and now language has evolved. So it could very well be primer is just as bona fide as primer.
Primer.
Okay.
And one could be English and one could be American. I don't know. Yeah.
What's in, I'll even be generous. Tell us what's in your primer at carlvondereau.com.
Oh, okay. Well, it's about 40 pages long. And it's all about the elements of how to tell a story. And it's, written in one page summaries of each element of how to tell a story. And there are examples from other people throughout. So you can see how someone has actually used this. One of them is like, do you lose credibility by admitting weakness? So how do we set up a story? What should we know about the hero's journey? What about sidekicks, these are all the elements in a story, the nitty-gritty inside story description, which we've been talking about. It's not everything you describe, but the one thing that illuminates everything.
Let's amplify one of those. Tell us more about sidekicks.
Yeah. Sidekicks is something we all could use a little bit more of, Here's an example. Cheetos, they had this... Cheetos, hot Cheetos from Frito-Lay. Okay, so how did that originate? That's another technique of storytelling. You're telling where you're going to end up and then how did we get there? So the CEO of Frito-Lay said, look, we're all going to be CEOs of the company and all of you were open to all your suggestions. So there was a janitor there who was Hispanic. And he went in to buy some Fritos, and he took it home, and he put on his own seasoning into these Fritos. And he said, it's much better this way, and the company never has thought of this. So here's something else you have to have as a nonprofit or anyone. What we call it, the protagonist in a story, is they seize the sword. They take the sword to do battle, right? And he called up the CEO and said, I want to make a presentation to your board. So he went, they were open-minded, and they went in and he showed them the sample of what he had done, and it became one of the most successful brands in the company's history. And the CEO said, it's time for you to put down your mop. So, stories like that. So he was a sidekick. And the CEO was not afraid to emphasize how the sidekick saved the company. In stories, sidekicks are often doing all the wrong things, but they almost always come up with one key inspiration that saves everybody. So when you tell about how a sidekick in your organization really helped you solve something, you're validating them. You're elevating them, you're establishing your own bona fides as a leader, and you're inspiring people to, want to be told the next story, want to be the character in the next story. So I think it's underused.
That example that you just cited is very instructive that occasional stories about your own work.
Yeah.
They can't dominate your feed but occasional like insider stories.
Yeah.
I think that lets the donors, potential donors, the volunteers, the potential volunteers, other stakeholders you might have, maybe even some of the people who work for, the beneficiaries that you're working for, lets people inside a little. That goes back to the vulnerability.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
A vulnerability sets some emotion. But, occasional, we don't want to dismiss it as navel gazing. Or, you know, nobody's going to be
No,
interested in, nobody's going to
no.
be interested in the way the sausage is made. That's another way of writing off the insider story. But I think an occasional insider story, again, makes you vulnerable and lets people in to your work.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And we're all sidekicks, and we all maybe go from sidekick to leader. You know, and then we mentor our own sidekicks, other people's sidekicks, who are going to continue the mission of the organization, and they're going to take it in ways that you never dreamed of. That's what you want. Here's another story of like a sidekick. There was a kid here in San Diego who he was poor. He wanted to go to college. He didn't have a lot of money. He worked at Burger King, and after graduation, he was in his gown. He went to the Burger King where all his friends were working, and he saw it was really crowded. So he got behind the counter in his gown, and he started serving people. And one person came there, and she was so impressed with how courteous he was and how willing he was to help that she started a GoFundMe account for him. It got $180,000. And this kid's college education is taken care of. Now, who was the sidekick there? I'm not really sure, but she was kind of, and they were both, but he was kind of, and they both were leaders at the same time.
Yeah, he was a sidekick to his friends. That's what brought him in. And then
Yeah.
he jumped on the other side of the counter and she became his sidekick.
And
All
she
right,
be,
but.
yeah. And he hopefully will become a leader, you know. Well, he was a leader because how many kids would go in their gown and help at Burger King? I mean, that's real leadership.
Yeah. All right, so leave us with something else, something we haven't talked about, or something you want to go deeper in. You know, again, our listeners are all in small and mid-sized nonprofits, writing 50 to 300 words. What else would you like to share that we haven't covered or covered sufficiently?
Okay, so I think knowing your audience, we haven't talked about. So as a novelist, what's your genre? Who's your audience? Who are your readers? It's not what do you write about, who are your readers? And when you tell a story and you go to a donor, who's that audience? And what are they interested in? Abraham Lincoln had a famous quote, "If I had an hour to cut down a tree, I'd spend the first 45 minutes sharpening my axe." You know, so all that preparation is really important. What does that person stand for? What are they involved in? What of your stories are going to reach that person? What figure out the five questions you want to ask that person before you even get in there. And then you have some stories. You maybe have five stories that you think they might apply, but you're not sure until you get that acknowledgement from that person as to what they're really interested in and what they're passionate about, because that's where you're going to connect emotionally. And then tell that story and how it connects to their passion. Then it gets you into something else we haven't talked about, which is the ask. I think a lot of nonprofits are really good at storytelling. They're not so good at the ask. They're not so good at using numbers, but how do you then transition from the story into the ask, you know? And it's all about we and us, making that transition. So, you know, for the kid in Burger King, we want to help teenagers like him become a hero like he was. And we're looking for people that can invest with us in doing that. And we think you might really be a good investor in that. So you go from we to invest. We're not asking for money, we're asking for investment. And you are now part of the story because, and then you get to the bigger message that we're going to change San Diego that way, you know, some kind of bigger message to the story. If you want, and part of in my book, if you want to see somebody that really knows how to tell a story well, there is a TED Talk by David Miliband, who was in charge of the refugee organization. And there's an 18-minute TED Talk. And you will see how he uses personal, how he uses other people's stories, how he uses facts, statistics, how he uses messaging, how he uses bigger message, how he transforms it into a, I'm telling you, to it's us together, and how it's important to you as a person. It's all in 18 minutes. It's really good.
David Miliband. Okay. You know the name of his TED Talk?
It's refugee status. Let's see. Well, here, I got it right here. I'm sorry to International Rescue Committee is in charge of, and it's the refugee crisis is a test of our character.
Okay. Well, and IRC is a charity itself, International Rescue
Yes.
Committee. All
Yes.
right.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, we can check out David, and we can check out your primer. See how generous I am saying I said primer. I said primer twice when I know it's dead wrong. No, that's no.
Well, yeah, maybe it's Premier
Everybody's gonna look it up, and
Fasci.
they'll know who's right. It might be both, but
Anyway.
I'll be so generous as to say it a third time. We can check out your primer at karlvondereau.com. You can
And
check
go
out
to the news.
your latest novel, Saving Miles, Miles, MYLES, by Karl
Yes.
Vondereau.
Yes, and on the website, go to the newsletter, and it would t you have to subscribe to the newsletter supposedly to get the primer, but it's right at the bottom there. You can download it.
Okay. You just gave us the pro tip that we don't
Yeah, I
have.
did. I
But
did.
if we just join Carl's newsletter, join his email list, join the list, because then you'll know about the next book that's coming out,
And I do
and everyone else.
every one I do a description of a financial scam that's happened somewhere, and I haven't done one on a nonprofit. I think that would be really interesting.
All right, let's not. All right, sometimes the financial scams get too much public press, too much mass media, and then
Yeah.
people think. I don't think that's a good idea, Carl, because
Okay.
nonprofits are under such pressure now. How about do an uplifting nonprofit story? Because
Okay.
Congress,
I'll do
and
that.
led by Marjorie Taylor Greene, is they're so
I'll
down
do that.
on nonprofits and scams, and Elon Musk called us a Ponzi scheme. Don't do a negative story.
Okay.
Do
Okay.
financial crimes on Wall Street. Do an uplifting nonprofit story, please.
All right.
How about
All
that,
right.
please?
All right. I'll do that.
I'm asking the my captain. Please do the uplifting. If you're going to do a nonprofit story, make it a positive one. All right,
Okay. All right. I'll
Carl
do that.
Vondereau, karlvondereau.com. Carl, thank you very much. I knew this was going to be fun because a couple or several weeks ago we had storytelling, but it was from a PR consultant perspective, which was valuable. She was very, very good. Talked about local media and things, but when I saw your pitch about storytelling from the award-winning novelist perspective, I knew it would be equally valuable and very different than anything we've ever done. So thank you for bringing that to us.
Okay. Well, thank you. It was fun. Like I said, it was going to be fun.
The fun did continue. It's still fun now. At the end, it's still fun. Okay, good. And it was fun in the middle too. It didn't wane and then become fun again. It
The
was
sag
fun.
in the middle is what every novelist
No, we
dreads.
didn't have that. No, we had a consistent. No, it was linear. Linear. It was probably logarithmic growth in fun. I would say,
Oh, the hockey stick.
not even just exponential. Yes, it was logarithmic fun growth. I'm sure of it. All right, so we'll leave it there. All right. Now.
Okay.
Thank you very much,
All
Carl. It was a real
right.
pleasure.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, same here. That was, and thank you so much for inviting me.
My pleasure.
Next week, the value of nonprofit journalism for your work with Mother Jones CEO Monica Bauerlein. If you missed any part of this week's show,
I beseech you, find it at tonymartinetti.com.
our creative producer is Claire Meyerhoff. I'm your associate producer, Kate Martinetti. The show's social media is by Susan Chavez. Mark Silverman is our web guy, and this music is by Scott Stein.
Thank you for that affirmation, Scotty. Be with us next week for Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Go out and be great.